In the grand theater of life, we all seek a comeback, a resurgence, a rekindling of our inner fire. But how do we spark that flame? Welcome to Reignite Resilience. This is not just another podcast. This is a journey, a venture into the heart of human spirit, the power of resilience, and the art of reigniting our passions.
Welcome back to part two of our two-part series on dyslexia. We are joined by the expert Joy Short, who is a coach, a consultant, and the director of No-Code Dyslexia. In this second part of the two-part series, we are going to give you tools, resources, and tips that you can utilize in your own life. And of course, Joy is going to share some fabulous stories on how she is able to empower the individuals within her life that have been diagnosed with dyslexia. Enjoy.
And I think that kind of leads me to the topic of shame. I believe you mentioned it a little bit, because from my experience, I feel like there's some shame that is associated with having these learning disabilities. So a lot of people don't want to seek out help, and they don't want to tell people that they have dyslexia. I know that when I went to CSU, I had the option of having somebody come to class with me, take notes. I could take tests separately and have as much time as I wanted to take the test. I never used it because I'm like, nope, I don't want to be different. Nope, I don't want some person coming with me doing my notes. So I didn't want to, because there was shame related to it. So I'd love to kind of dig into that a little bit, the feeling of shame that individuals have with having a disability like this, and maybe what parents feel when they have a child that is diagnosed with dyslexia, when you have this world that we live in where we're comparing other people's kids to our kids. And so can we talk a little bit about that?
Oh, definitely. That is an area very close to my heart, because I do have the personal connection with having a son with dyslexia, and his dad also has dyslexia. So it's my whole life. And I have several best friends with dyslexia as well. So I get to see the personal side of how it impacts them and the shame area. And that's what I studied for my master's too. That was my thesis. So to start with, I think there's two facets of it. And you touched on this, the individual level of how do we identify as someone with disability, and how do we learn to not have the shame, and how do we learn to be okay with accepting those accommodations, which is great that the college would give you all of that. My son struggled with that too, with having this great set of accommodations at his high school, and he never used any of them.
No.
And so how do we deal with that? And I personally don't have dyslexia. So I feel like sometimes I can't speak to that, what is that like to have a disability and know how to not feel shame around it? I feel like it's more a societal, global issue that over time we're getting better with it, just like we are in the area of mental health. I was just listening to a podcast about how even just 10 years ago, we would not use the words depression, anxiety, bipolar as freely as we do now, where we would just even on Facebook, we'll say, I'm struggling with a lot of depression right now. And so we do as a society make progress. And I think we're doing that with dyslexia too. And so I feel like as we get better about just using these terms and talking about it, and even just a few years ago, teachers would tell me, oh, we're not really allowed to say the word dyslexia in the school building, which actually wasn't really true, or it wasn't accurate, but they weren't. So they weren't even saying that word, where now they are just a few years later. So I really think it's more on a global level, where if our kids are hearing people talking about it, their friends talking about it, their friends saying, oh yeah, I have dyslexia, really, you too? And there's just more open conversation around it. I think that that will translate into individually feeling same with mental health, where you realize so many other people struggle with this as well. If you have challenges with depression and you start hearing more conversation around people freely talking about it on an individual level, it helps you feel more empowered. And I'm not alone. That's such a powerful thing, feeling like I'm not alone. Dyslexia is so common. They really believe that it could be 1 in 5 people have it. That would make it the most most common condition out there, really. 1 in 5 people, up to 1 in 10. So anywhere from 10 to 20% of the population has it. So the more we can just talk about it, like it's just this regular thing, that it's just a different way of learning and a different way of doing life and seeing the world, the better it will be on the individual level too. The more that teachers can talk about it and learn about it. I'm an educator, so I'm always going to be a big fan of education. So the more we can educate educators to use the different technology tools in the classroom, then students will see, oh, other kids are using this too. I'm not the only one. Again, I'm not alone. I'm not weird. I'm not unique in that I need this. And so that alleviates so much shame when you can feel connected to other people, more a collective, like I'm part of something bigger. There's all these people that have dyslexia too. And I have 5 other kids in my class with it. And we're all using audiobooks in the classroom. So I think that's a really big part of it. And then as part of my thesis, doing the research, what the research that I found anyways supports is 2 areas for change to decrease shame. So the first one is empathy training. So people who don't have dyslexia, really making sure we target and teach them in a way that promotes empathy so that they understand that this is a real struggle, that these kids are not adults too, are not just being lazy, are not just dumb, are not, like, we have a lot of judgment around spelling in our society where we see when someone doesn't spell something properly on Facebook, we have a lot of judgment around that. So yeah, turning that narrative around and teaching about, once I got into this field, I was honestly one that used to have a lot of judgment for people who did not spell well, because I never struggled with that. But once I had more empathy around these really big challenges that are going on for someone with dyslexia, then that gets rid of a lot of the judgment, which then can help with the shame when people have more empathy and understanding. So that was the first thing that I found in the research. The second thing was specific kind of training and teaching in the area of the brain and showing educators or whoever, really, even the child themselves, about what's really going on in the brain. Mm-hmm. That it's not, again, not really a lack of effort and I just need to work harder to try and read or write better, but mm-hmm. it's an actual total difference in the brain, how the brain is working and functioning when someone has dyslexia compared to when someone does not have dyslexia. So that has really fueled me in my businesses to target my training for my staff, for parents, for kids in those areas of, you know, teaching about the brain and what's going on. So that can help with the shame and the shaming behaviors that we do as a society when we shame people who don't read well or don't write well. We would not shame someone for not having use of their legs in a wheelchair. We wouldn't shame them and tell them to just work really hard and focus more and slow down and try to really work hard at climbing up the stairs. We just give them an elevator. But with learning disabilities, we don't seem to have that same level of compassion and empathy. So it's really, I think, to decrease shame, and from what I found in the research, we really need to target the type of training that we're giving people so that they do have more empathy and compassion towards someone who struggles in this area.
Interesting. That's so interesting. I remember an experience, it wasn't that long ago, where I sent a text message to somebody and they responded. They're like, "Nice spelling. Do you have dyslexia?" And I was like, "Actually, I do." I was just like, wow. And I didn't think it would bother me. But when you brought that up, I was like, yeah, people just don't. Yeah, we aren't very empathetic about other people and what maybe is going on. And then the part about the specific training about the brain and the identifying people aren't lazy, just work harder. When I was very young, before I was diagnosed, I just remember almost feeling like I was in trouble sitting at the table with my dad saying, "You need to get this done. You need to get this done," because I wasn't getting it done during the day in class because I was struggling with the reading. And so, yeah, that feeling. So yeah, so interesting.
I think there's, if I can add on a little bit more to that too, there's a lot of judgment when someone doesn't read or spell well. I think we equate, not we like you and me, we don't, but as a society, we equate that with maybe lower intelligence or lower effort. Yeah. And we know that learning disabilities, whether if you have a learning disability in math or if you have a learning disability in reading and writing like dyslexia, you do not have lower intelligence at all. In fact, you may have above average IQ, average to above average IQ. That's the characteristic of a learning disability, is good intelligence, high intelligence, but then you still struggle in these areas. And so we somehow equate that when someone struggles with reading and writing as this person just isn't either working hard enough or they're not smart enough. That belief needs to change societally.
Yeah. So it's educating the society more about dyslexia. And I mean, with the number of people that have it, when you share those numbers, you know, 10 to 20%, that's a huge number. And yet we don't talk about it. And it's interesting when I'm telling people that we're doing this podcast and I'm sharing my story with dyslexia, it's like, you have dyslexia? And I'm like, I do have it. So I think that's one of the steps too, is having the courage to come forward and share that there's a lot of people out there that have dyslexia and we don't have to be ashamed of it. So this podcast, when it comes out, there's going to be a lot of my friends and colleagues and clients that are going to be like, what? So it's very interesting, but it's got to start somewhere. So I love it.
Dyslexia is often referred to as a hidden disability or invisible disability, partly because the shame aspect, you do tend to hide it. And it's very hereditary. It runs usually from parent to child. Mm-hmm. So it usually weaves its way through the whole family tree. And mm-hmm. oftentimes, even family members don't know that other family members have it. They don't know that their parent had it, or their grandparent, or their aunt or cousin has it, because it's not talked about, because it is so shameful, because individuals feel like and they tell me this all the time. I worked with a 72-year-old last year. I worked with a 68-year-old last month, and they tell me that they have lived their whole life feeling like they're just not good enough, that they're dumb. Yeah. And so they don't talk about it. It's just this cycle, this circle where they don't talk about it and you hide it. You learn, you're so intelligent, you learn strategies to kind of hide it. And then, like you said, your friends will say, wait, what? What is it? You have dyslexia, because you're really good at knowing how to hide it.
Yeah. Well, I intentionally read your bio at the beginning because I get anxiety when I have to read out loud. And so I was like, you know what? Just walk the talk. So that's why I think people don't think I have it. And I do public speaking and I teach, but the things that I have to do to be able to do it behind the scenes, not very many people know about. And it's funny, I was telling Natalie on the podcast where Natalie interviews me, I was doing a presentation on the brain and how it works and how we're able to create these beliefs. And it was on, and I was sharing my story with dyslexia. And that morning I was like, I don't think I have it anymore. I think I'm cured of dyslexia. And so I like go online and they're like, no, you can't cure it. I'm like, oh, well, shoot, I guess I still have it. So I literally, as an adult, I'm 52, got to a place where I'm like, I had taught myself or believed that I didn't have dyslexia anymore. And so if I can believe that I don't have it, that means I'm not sharing it. I'm not sharing the struggles that I go through with everything that I do in my life to be able to function.
I don't mean to laugh at all.
You can laugh.
I think that it's a testament to you, though, that you have worked really hard through your life and learned how to have these different workarounds and strategies and how to bypass different things or extra practice and rehearse things a lot before you read them out loud, and people with dyslexia have to work so extremely hard for some of those basic things that those of us who don't have dyslexia don't have to do. But yeah, I've encountered a lot of adults who have that same belief that you just shared, because that's all they know. They don't know any different. And now as an adult, they're reading, they're writing, they're succeeding in life. life, dyslexics are very successful usually in life. And so unless you're totally illiterate, that's a different story, sadly, unfortunately. Yeah. But if you're a very successful business person and you're doing a ton of different things, so it is easy to have that belief, I would think, that okay, yeah, I overcame this, I'm good. But yeah, we know that it's, you're born with it and you die with it. It's a lifelong thing that is just a different way of learning, a different way that the brain is functioning, and you will always have that. Yeah.
It's interesting because over time, my dad now has this belief that he's suffered with dyslexia. And one of the things that he struggled with his entire life is spelling. When he will do emails and things like that, he always had an issue with spelling and reading. And he's an avid reader like I am. I do audiobooks because I can ingest it way faster because I read so slow. But yeah, we figure out how to do different things differently. And it becomes a habit. It's just for me, it's just my normal way of doing things. So absolutely. You have a question, Sally?
I do, Joy. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think I have so many ahas and takeaways just from what you've shared so far. I think the biggest piece that really pops up when we are talking about like the shame and the judgment that often comes with the diagnosis of dyslexia or someone sharing that they have dyslexia, it continues on. And one thing that we really stress, or we continue to stress with Reignite Resilience, is finding that community so that you can surround yourself with people that you can share this with, and they have the empathy and they want to learn alongside you to see how they can support you if it's, you know, in meeting structures, things of that nature. But you kind of walk the walk and talk the talk. You yourself, in the center that you've built, I think what you referenced to it as is a neurodiverse staff, and you have 22 staff members. Talk to us a little bit about that. I mean, you are truly like walking the walk and talking the talk. What does that look like in your center?
Oh, I have just the most amazing community of kids, adults. Most everybody has dyslexia at our center. So the kids that we tutor, or adults that we tutor, but the kids that we tutor have a parent with dyslexia and probably a grandparent with dyslexia. So we get to interact with, you know, I just get to engage with a lot of great people with dyslexia on that realm, our clients that we're doing tutoring with. But then, yeah, my staff, I hire intentionally for dyslexia. So when I'm looking at resumes, job applications online, when I'm hiring someone, I'm actually looking at resumes that have spelling errors. And that I wouldn't think that would probably be a common thing that companies are looking at.
Yes.
Like, oh, this has a ton of spelling errors. Yeah, let me look at this one a little bit more closely.
Bring it in. We want to chat. Yes, I love it.
But I do, especially if there's a lot of the confusion between two and two, or there, and there. Those kind of things are very common with dyslexia, and it's hard to get spell checkers to edit that out. So you're going to see those errors on resumes. And it doesn't necessarily mean automatically that somebody has dyslexia, and I'm not going to diagnose somebody with dyslexia just by reading their resume. But once I talk with them a little bit, again, hear how they say words, like if they say dyslexia instead of dyslexia when I'm doing their interview, and even if they don't know that they have dyslexia, I'm pretty good at spotting it. I hope I am, because that's my job. That's my expertise. So yeah. I can, even in like a 30, 45 minute job interview, I can kind of tell, like, and if they talk about, you know, they struggled in school, and so that's why they were interested in this job, is they want to help other kids who are struggling in school. You know, I can kind of tell, like, I bet this individual possibly may have dyslexia. And I love having people on staff who have learning challenges too. So we have people that have other struggles besides just dyslexia. Mm-hmm. And it just makes our organization better. One of our core values is empathy for our organization's mission statement. Mm-hmm. And so to have empathy, we do want to have people who know, because I don't personally know what it's like on a personal level to have dyslexia. So I want staff in my organization that know personally what it's like to struggle with that. And they make me better as a leader, and they connect with their students in a really powerful way. They can share. They share all the time, like almost every tutoring session, they'll share just a little story about, I understand. That feeling again of you're not alone. I've been there too. So I love that about our team. We have a very dynamic team, and but it's intentional. And I would love to see other companies do that too. They could benefit from having a more, and we're getting better societally, you know, about learning how to have a more neurodiverse team and what that means to have neurodiversity in the workplace. But I think that we could do that a whole lot better.
I love that. I think that's the most beautiful, empowering thing. When I learned that about you and I'm learning that about the center, I often think about our industry, and that's not a focus or priority. And that is a lot of work that happens within the real estate industry, is, you know, having that work around diversity, but we don't talk about neurodiversity, right? We talk about all of the other different abilities, but not necessarily neurodiversity,
right,
which I think is an opportunity for us to make sure that we continue to dive into it and explore it. Because like you said, for me, it just sounds like your center just has like a lot of magical moments. That's exactly what it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, that's a good way to describe it. I mean, we do in lots of different areas, but yeah, especially with staff. We just had a staff meeting a few days ago that very topic was addressed. And it is so great to hear the stories. And again, it makes me a better leader because I hear their personal stories of when they were 8 years old and they were struggling. And we bring that into then how we teach our kids.
I love that. I love that. What resources are out there for people? So I know you said a good place to start is just Google it, but what resources, if somebody believes that, you know, I know you said look for local organizations, are there other resources that are out there? And maybe are there technological tools that people can use that have dyslexia to make their lives easier? I know Audible is a huge one for me, but are there other tools as well?
So the resources out there, I definitely try and connect with someone local if you can. And then non-local resources that I really like are the IDA is the International Dyslexia Association. So that's an internationally known organization that really is the source for all the research. Okay. So they do a lot of the funding for the great research that's going on currently. And so I just went to one of the IDA conferences a few months ago in San Antonio and got to listen to presentations from the top neuroscientists in the field of dyslexia. And so they have a great website that you can go to and watch videos, read articles. So that is, I believe, dyslexiaida.org. So the IDA is a really well-known, you know, research-based organization.
Okay.
That I highly recommend. Another one that has great videos is Bright Solutions for Dyslexia. And I believe that's .com. It might be .org. I apologize. But Bright, B-R-I-G-H-T, Bright Solutions for is F-O-R. brightsolutionsfordyslexia.com. And I like that one just because, you know, a lot of the parents who are looking to get more information also have dyslexia and don't necessarily want to read a bunch of articles. They want to watch videos, more visually based information. So there's really great videos on there. There's also understood.org, and that has some great articles and videos. And that also has all different learning challenges. You can learn about ADHD on there too. Dysgraphia also goes along with dyslexia, usually, like poor penmanship, handwriting. So you can learn more on understood.org. You can learn more about dysgraphia. And let's see, technology tools. So anything that provides a workaround in the area of print. So anything that will turn print into speech. And we live in a time where we're very fortunate to have devices, our phones and computers that have it built in. It's free. You don't even have to buy anything. But there's also apps too, that some free apps and some that you can purchase. But usually the terminology that we use in this field is speech to text and text to speech. So you can, again, just kind of Google like what are good speech to text or text to speech apps. And so speech to text is like Siri. I don't want to really say it because it will pick up on my phone and she'll ask me what I want. But you know, you ask her like, hey, can you text my husband and ask him to pick up milk at the grocery store on the way home from work? That's an example of speech to text where my speech is being turned into print.
Okay.
So that can help you with so many things. That can help you with anything that you need to write. If you're writing a document, like I said, with the police officers and firefighters who have to write a lot of things using speech to text so they don't have to write so much. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, text to speech would be where anything that is text is read out loud to you. It turns into speech. And again, most phones have that built in where you can snap a picture of some text and it will immediately scan it and read it aloud to you right away.
Amazing.
I mean, that's amazing. At least I know with my iPhone, the newest update of, or maybe the second to newest update a few months ago, now has that capability where instead of an image file, it used to be pretty tricky to, you know, it would be an image file. It couldn't draw the text out of there. But now anything that has text on a photo, it will read it aloud to you.
Wow.
But then there's other apps that are a little bit beefier, that are a little bit more maybe reliable or easier for kids to use. But that's pretty easy to snap a picture of something and have it read out loud to you. So we at our center usually recommend to parents to give your kiddo an old phone that's, you know, hanging out at your house, wipe it of everything, take all the games and everything off of there, and just make sure that they know how to use it before sending it into the school. Make sure that the school is going to allow that, you know, put that on a 504 plan, that accommodation that they are allowed to have a phone in the classroom. But we have kids as young as kindergarten that will be taking phones into the classroom with some earbuds, and they can use all of those tech tools then to access the material in the classroom a lot more efficiently.
Wow. Yeah. So, and I imagine this is like newer, like they didn't have this when I was in school. So a lot of amazing tools that are available to people now, which I absolutely appreciate and love. What are some final thoughts from you that you would like our listeners to know?
Let's see. I think overall, I would just give the message of hope.
Yeah.
That it is really overwhelming and it could be scary. You might not really know anything about dyslexia until maybe your child's teacher just told you that they're suspecting dyslexia. They're seeing in the classroom that this kiddo is struggling, and you might want to go get the teacher might say you might want to go get your kiddo tested for dyslexia. And it can be really scary. Like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And so I just want to give that message of hope that it really is a very, I don't want to use the word treatable. It's not necessarily what we would consider curable, but there's a lot of great interventions out there. So ways that we can teach reading and writing to someone with dyslexia that really make a huge difference and can get them up to grade level very quickly if they are getting the right kind of intervention. And then also accommodations like those technology tools. And the education and awareness around dyslexia now is a lot better than even a few years ago. We have a lot of legislation in all 50 states now that we didn't have even 10 years ago when I started doing this. So we've got laws now that are, you know, really forcing schools to improve how they're teaching kids with dyslexia. So there, I just want to send encouragement to anyone, even if you're an adult and you think you might have dyslexia and you're just starting that journey on researching it, there's a lot of great information and tools and resources now that we didn't even have just a few years ago. Yeah. And there's great research that supports these tools and these interventions. So we know if you're working with someone, again, who knows what they're doing and has been doing this for a while, and you get connected with them and they can help support you and give you those resources, it can make all the difference. It can change if you're able to succeed in college at the college level. It can change how you interact with people in your workplace and help you to be more successful at work. It can help your child with dyslexia to be successful in school. There's just a lot of tools out there once you get connected with those that can really make a huge difference in your current struggles that you have right now.
I love it. So hope, and the really the message is that you're not alone. There's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of resources out there. And so thank you so much for taking the time and spending some time with us and just sharing this message about dyslexia. It's something that's close to my life. And so I just wanted to make sure that we got it out there. And if our listeners found this valuable, please share it on your social media. The more people we can reach and share this message with, the more we can build this community that we are hoping to build. And Joy, we will make sure that we put your information in our show notes so that people could reach out to you if they need more information. And that's all I have to say. Natalie, do you have anything to wrap us up?
I just want to thank you, Joy, so much for just taking the time out to share a snippet of your knowledge around dyslexia with us in our community. So valuable to me. I was frivolously taking notes yet again. I think the last time we visited, I had 3 pages of notes that I took away from our conversation. And here I am again with another page full of notes. So hopefully everyone else had some takeaways, some ahas, an opportunity to reflect on where they are. And even if they think that they've had challenges in the past, the story that you shared today that continues to pop up for me is the gentleman that you mentioned that you did the assessment for that's in his 70s. And I think to go so many decades and now knowing that there are tools and resources and that he could have applied and used in his life to make things not easier, but just to at least making that learning process and navigation through life a little bit easier. Yeah. That's my ask for everyone. If it's not children, if it's you yourself or other loved ones that you feel could benefit from this episode, share it with them. We just want to continue to empower those folks that have been diagnosed with dyslexia and those that are going to receive that diagnosis in the future. Just know that there's a community here to support you. There's no shame in that. And we will help in empowering any way that we can. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam and Natalie, for allowing me to share today. My mission is always going to be to teach. I'm a teacher. And so allowing me to teach and share information so that people can feel like they're not alone if they're going through this challenge, and they hopefully get more information to know where to start on this journey and that there is hope. And so thank you, ladies, for allowing me to participate today.
Absolutely. It was absolutely an honor to meet you and to get to hear your story. So thank you so much.
Wonderful. Until next time, thanks, Reignite Resilience. We'll see you in a few days.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for joining us today. Remember to subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast with others who are seeking to reignite their resilience. Stay tuned for our upcoming episodes where we'll continue to explore the remarkable power of resilience. Until next time, keep the fire of resilience burning bright in your hearts. Bye, guys.